What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Fireside Giants. I'm your host, Anthony Rivardo, joined by my co-host, Alex Wilson. And today, we're talking head coaches. What should the Giants be looking for in their next head coach? We're going to go over our personal criteria, what boxes we're hoping that the next guy checks, and we're going to talk about some of the candidates who fill some of those boxes. Some of them fill them better than others. Some of them don't fill them at all. And we're going to go ahead and discuss all of that in today's episode and many more different topics. Because you know Alex, he likes to rant and ramble, and all of a sudden, he goes off on a new path, brings up something new, and then it frustrates me, and I got to yell at him, and then we have a great sparked debate. So, you guys know the drill. This is how we do on Fireside Giants. Alex, how are you doing today, my friend? And what are you looking for in the Giants' next head coach?
Man, you got to insult me right off the bat. Ridiculous. But you're right, I do tend to go on side quests and ruffle feathers. That is something I'm very good at accidentally, but nonetheless, it's all productive conversation about the New York Football Giants. And right now we're trying to have a productive conversation about the future of the New York Football Giants. And Anthony, we talked yesterday about the Commanders game. We were there. It's just as bad in person as it is online. I promise you, watching that on television, at least you're warm with your blankie on your couch with some snacks and probably bleach and beer. That's the only way to survive this Giants football team right now, an overconsumption of very toxic beverage. But I'll tell you what, the future has to have a light at the end of the tunnel. And we want to talk about, as you mentioned, head coaches who have qualities that we really like. Now, it's hard and borderline impossible to find a head coach that has every quality, like leader of men, great schematically, like does all the things that we're going to talk about. Sometimes you have to pick a guy that has a bunch, as one or two of those things, but wants to learn and grow into that role, right? That was Brian Daboll's biggest problem, Anthony. He never learned. He never improved. He never got better. Just as he expects his team to get better and Banks to develop and, you know, this guy to get better, that guy to get, he never got better. And how do you preach something that you're trying to get other people to buy into if you yourself are not actually taking your own advice? I think that was the biggest problem with Brian Daboll. He preached a big game, preached development, preached this, and he never even did it. So all the players are looking at him like, you make the same mistakes every single week, bro. Like, you know, situational awareness, timeout usage, this, that, kicking problem. I mean, every single week is the same problems. You're preaching to us to get better, but you can't even improve. That is a huge red flag. And the Giants, Anthony, I'll pass it to you this way. They need a guy who's going to set the damn example. So that way, every single player looks at that head coach, looks at that guy, looks at that executive and says, that dude is leading by example. Why do you think Eli Manning was a leader in that clubhouse? Not because he was, you know, a big talkative guy, but because that dude showed up every single day and worked his ass off. Sometimes that's more important than speaking. Sometimes it's actions. And oftentimes it's always actions that do more speaking than words. So the Giants need a head coach who's going to speak with action and not rah-rah bullshit like Mike Kafka showed us the other day in that ridiculous video of him cursing for fun. You know, they need someone genuine and legitimate. I just don't think the Giants have had someone like that in quite a long time.
Not since Tom Coughlin. I mean, Tom Coughlin led by example. He was hard on the players, but he was hard on himself. He set a standard. Everybody had to be at those meetings at least 5 minutes early. If not, you're late and you're fined for being late. And so what did the players do? They led by that example. They showed up 10 minutes early, right? And then you saw all these players come in and really put their head in the sand and just start working. And that's what you saw from Tom Coughlin's leadership was examples and a standard that got set. So let's talk about being a leader of men. That's the number one trait that we're going to discuss first and foremost. It might not be the number one trait that we're looking for. It might not be the most important trait, but it is among them. So let's talk about being a leader of men. We have on this graphic on the screen, if you're watching on YouTube, it's got a picture of Marcus Freeman, but we're not saying that we want Marcus Freeman because he's a leader of men. We're saying we want a leader of men, and we believe Marcus Freeman is one. But so are some of these other candidates that we're going to discuss. Being a leader of men, I think, is super important, Alex, for all the reasons you just broke down and all the reasons that we're going to dive a little bit deeper into here. Like you said, you have to lead by example. But also being a leader of men, what comes along with that? Accountability. The Giants have not had enough accountability in their locker room. They have players who don't put in effort. They have players who don't try. They have players who speak to the media and kind of say things that they probably shouldn't say. They need a head coach who's going to hold them accountable, who's going to make them earn it with every single rep, No more should Evan Neal be handed a job in the starting lineup. No more should Deonte Banks be handed a job in the starting lineup just because they were drafted highly. They need a guy who's going to step in and say the best 11 men on each side of the ball, whoever performs the best in practice, whoever puts on the best game film, that's who's starting this next week. And so Marcus Freeman's a great example of a guy who is a leader of men. What he's done over at that Notre Dame college football program is incredible. He has great people skills. He's got an ability to connect with his players and create really strong relationships with those players in the locker room, particularly with the leaders in the locker room. But so do other candidates. If Mike Tomlin shakes free from the Pittsburgh Steelers, Alex, he's the ultimate leader of men. And that's why he's going to be among the top head coaching candidates if he is available. But there are other guys who are going to be in this cycle that we're going to be really attracted to because of their leadership. But leadership, it's paramount. You have to be a strong leader, and you can't just be a player's coach. We've seen quotes now coming out from the Giants players saying, we don't want a player's coach. We don't want a guy who's chummy and who's friends with some of the guys in the locker room. We want somebody who's going to set a standard, who's going to hold us accountable. There are Giants players anonymously who are saying that to the reporters right now. What does that tell me? Brian Daboll, too chummy with the players, didn't have enough accountability, had friendships with specific guys like Jackson Dart. And listen, I love Jackson Dart, and I love that he had a good relationship and it helped him develop so quickly. But is that healthy for the entire team? No. We need a guy who is not everybody's friend, but who is everybody's boss, but a boss that they believe in. And that's going to help them put their heads together, work hard, and win games. So a leader of men, that is one of the most important traits on our head coaching checklist. If you're not a leader of men, you're not getting this job, in my opinion. You have to be a leader, and you have to find a way to guide these men in the locker room and help them come collectively towards a common goal, which is winning a championship.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when you look at the qualities that we want in a head coach, there's nothing more paramount than being a leader who is able to convince other people to focus on a specific goal, right? The Giants are all over the place. They don't know how to solve this. They don't know how to solve that. They don't know why this is happening. They don't know why that's happening. They don't have any answers, right? A leader always has an answer. And usually that answer is we need to take a step back, evaluate the situation, control what we can control. The Giants are oftentimes trying to control things that are out of their control. And that ultimately is a losing strategy. So, you know, we talk about Marcus Freeman in this instance, and this is why, you know, we made this graphic specifically with leader of men on it. He is a guy that the Giants like a lot, not because of his experience, not because of what he's done, but because of what and how he does things, right? His process behind success, his process behind getting people to buy into the sales pitch that he is trying to sell them. And ultimately, you said the operative word, accountability, right? It is not the job of the players to coach themselves. It is not the job of the players to coach other players. Too often, Anthony, over the last couple of years, we've seen both of those things happen, right? It is not Dexter Lawrence's job to take Abdul Carter under his wing and change his actions. That's usually the coaching staff's job. It is not the entire defense's job to go to Shane Bowen a couple weeks back and say to him, we need to change things. This is how we think things need to change. Look, it's good to have a collaborative experience, but we're not talking about collaborative experience. We're talking about interventions. You know, we're talking about interventions inside of that locker room. We're talking about, you know, the players having an intervention with Shane Bowen saying that doesn't work. We need to change that. We were talking about Dexter Lawrence having an intervention with Abdul Carter saying you need to grow the hell up. You need to change. Like, these are humongous problems that are being leaned onto the players, and they have enough on their plate already trying to prepare for themselves, trying to prepare for games, trying to keep their health up, trying to make sure that their role is clarified. Like, it's not their job to be doing what the coaches are supposed to be doing. So, you know, when you look at the situation at hand, you know, you look at a guy like Marcus Freeman, you think to yourself, this dude is going to galvanize an entire team. This dude is going to convince every single person to have accountability and buy into a specific goal. So yeah, like, if we're talking about him specifically, do I like Marcus Freeman? Absolutely. But there's other elements that he does lack, and we're going to talk about a couple of them in a second.
Yeah, the next trait that we're going to get into is going to be another important trait that Marcus Freeman does lack. But I will just wrap up on the point of Marcus Freeman. I know he's kind of a controversial figure right now among Giants fans, because there's a lot of Notre Dame fans who are Giants fans, and there's a lot of fans who are saying, I don't want him because he doesn't have experience, which is the key word we're going to get into in a second. But there's a lot of people who are like, look at what he did with that Notre Dame program. Incredible. I would love for a guy to step in and reset the culture like that. And culture is a big big part of this because the Giants culture is out of whack. They do not have a winning culture. They have a losing culture. By week 8, when they have a losing record, they all become apathetic and they stop trying and they give up on the season and they lose some more games, right? That's part of the culture. That needs to be reset. That would not happen, in my opinion, under Marcus Freeman. I do not think he would accept losing. I don't think he would accept players who accept losing. So being a leader of men, having an accountability culture, having a winning culture, I think he has those things over at Notre Dame. I think he is the one who implemented those things at Notre Dame. And I think that he could implement those things for the Giants, but so could some of these other candidates. I think guys like Chris Shula, guys like Jeff Hafley, I think they also have that leadership and that ability to lead men and apply a winning culture to the locker room because they've been in winning programs before and they've built winning programs before or helped build them. So all those things are important, but so is experience. And that's the next trait that we're going to discuss that we think is super crucial for the head coach. And we have Mike McCarthy on the screen because out of all of the candidates that we've seen floated for the New York Giants, Mike McCarthy has the most experience. He has 18 years of head coaching experience. That is an incredible body of work. And I know Giants fans, some of you don't love him because he didn't have a lot of success in the Super Bowl, in the playoffs. He's only been to one Super Bowl. He did win that one Super Bowl, but he hasn't been to the Super Bowl in about 15 years, and he's been to the playoffs plenty of times. He has a 500 record in the playoffs, so not a winning record, and a lot of early exits in the playoffs despite having really talented rosters. I understand those grievances with Mike McCarthy. But look at the positives because they honestly do far outweigh the negatives. This is a head coach who has experience, serious experience, who has won a tremendous amount of regular season games. He has a plus 600 win percentage. I mean, when was the last time the Giants have had a winning season? When was the last time they had back-to-back winning seasons? When was the last time that they won 12 games? Do you know the answers to those questions? They might shock you. The Giants have not won 12 games since 2008. Think about that. How many times has Mike McCarthy won 12 games since then? 5 times. He's had 12 win seasons since the Giants have had one. That's a guy who can make the Giants relevant again, competitive again, and that's because of his experience. And experience is super important. So when we're looking at some of these candidates, guys like Marcus Freeman, not enough experience for some of your likings, and that's understandable. Guys like Chris Shula, who've never been a head coach before, not enough experience. A guy like Jeff Hafley, Packers defensive coordinator, well, he has head coaching experience at the collegiate level. That's pretty interesting. But a guy like Mike McCarthy, if Mike Tomlin does shake free, if John Harbaugh does shake free, and I don't know if those guys really will, and you know, some of these other candidates that might be out there who maybe you do like and maybe you don't like, of a Matt Nagy or an Arthur Smith, those are not my favorite names, but they are experience, and that's why the Giants might be attracted to them. But experience, I think, is going to be paramount for this team. They have hired 4 straight head coaches with 0 head coaching experience, and all 4 of those guys have crashed, burned, and failed. That's why the Giants are going to lean on guys with experience in this head coaching cycle, and it makes a lot of sense. So, Alex, why do you think experience is such an important trait for the next Giants head coach?
I mean, listen, experience comes with a lot of things. And I know a lot of people are probably in the comments right now, I hate Mike McCarthy. I don't want Mike McCarthy. Guys, we don't know what Chris Shula would do. We don't know what Marcus Freeman would do. We don't know what Jeff Hafley would do. We don't know what anyone would do. But we do know what Mike McCarthy will do. You know, that's the only thing I'll say. Like, we have a pretty clear-cut definition of who Mike McCarthy is as a head coach. He has his flaws, right? He has his issues with time and clock management at times and situational awareness. These are things that have been red flags for him in the past. He has gotten to the playoffs, had some really, really good teams. But listen, the Giants have their quarterback. Like, this one thing I'll say about Mike McCarthy is a couple things. The first one is that dude knows how to maximize a quarterback. He knows how to build a team that maximizes a quarterback. The second thing is, you want to know what comes with experience, Anthony? Connections. Connections come with experience. You want to know what connections mean for a head coach? Good ass coordinators, really, really freaking good coordinators. You can make up the difference in bad coaching at times or bad head coaching at times. And I'm not even saying Mike McCarthy's a bad head coach, but you can make up the difference in areas of weakness for a head coach with really good coordinators, right? Kellen Moore, he's now the head coach of the freaking New Orleans Saints. You know, Dan Quinn, now the head coach of the Washington Commanders. Like, he has gotten multiple guys into tremendous roles, huge roles. Like, he's found these guys or even experienced ones and turned them into head coaches again. So, like, one thing about Mike McCarthy is you're going to get a guy who is going to immediately bring in top tier coordinators because he knows exactly what he needs. And I'll remind you guys, this is not a guy who's going to bring in an old ass Arthur Smith as his OC. He went and got Kellen Moore, one of the most dynamic and cutting edge offensive coordinators in football. He'll probably go after a guy like a Josh McCown, you know, someone like that. Who knows? He'll go after the cutting edge coordinators. He's not going to sit there and get us a lame duck. So I'm pretty confident about that. And that's a good thing you get with experience, those connections.
It's huge. And it's one of the most important things that goes overlooked oftentimes when talking about head coaching candidates. We talk about what are the traits of this individual? What are the traits of this head coach? The next step needs to be, who are they bringing with them? Who's their OC? Who's their DC? Who's their special teams coordinator? Those are so important of hirings to get this franchise back on the right track, because look at what Brian Daboll did. Brian Daboll messed up at DC. He had a good one. He had Wink Martindale. He blew that connection, and then he failed on his next hiring with Shane Bowen. He should have fired Shane Bowen this offseason. He didn't. He ran it back with him, and it cost him his job. Offensive coordinator Mike Kafka, through the ups and downs, he gave him the play calling. He took it away from him. He gave it back to him. He took it away. Those issues speak to the leadership, like we were talking about, but they also speak to a lack of experience. Having the experience of being in that CEO role allows you to foster the proper relationships with your coordinators, to allow your coordinators to grow, to trust them to be autonomous in their role, right? And delegate those tasks to them. That's what the Giants need, is a head coach who can handle that, have their finger on the pulse, but also hire the right coaches that you trust, right coordinators that you trust to do the job and to get that job right. And that's what Mike McCarthy, he's been so good at throughout his entire head coaching career, which again spans 18 seasons. Not only, you mentioned Kellen Moore, that's a great one to mention, but even Brian Schottenheimer was a great offense coordinator. Now he's the head coach for the Dallas Cowboys. People forget, after Kellen Moore left, Schottenheimer did a great job. Dan Quinn, you mentioned him. How about Joe Philbin? Way, way, way back when he was the DC for the Green Bay Packers. Their defense was dominant. He ended up becoming the head coach of the Dolphins. Maybe didn't have the best results with the Dolphins, but was a great defensive coordinator under Mike McCarthy. And even going back to a familiar name, Alex, Ben McAdoo was an elite offensive coordinator under Mike McCarthy. Not a great head coach for the New York Giants, but an elite game planning offensive coordinator who put together a whiz kid scheme that maximized quarterback talent. Even got a lot out of Eli Manning in that 2016 season when he was kind of on the decline. So I think that McCarthy, if you want a coach who's going to give you a great staff, McCarthy's your number one candidate, because he's going to hire a great staff. And that's just what you get from these experienced coaches. They've been around the league. They've had guys go in and out of their programs, and they've had guys go on and off of their staff, and they've made so many networking connections that allows them to build an elite staff pretty much overnight. That's what you get from McCarthy. That's what you might get from a guy also, Alex, like Jeff Hafley. Let's talk about Jeff Hafley, because I think Hafley has an underrated ability to bring in some a real nice network of coaches, because he's been with a lot of great teams. You know, he's coaching right now with the Packers, but at one point he was with the 49ers under that Shanahan tree. He was at Ohio State. They've had some great coaches and obviously some great prospects and players come out of there. He was obviously a head coach at Boston College, so he knows how to manage coordinators. That's another player or candidate here that I think has an underrated level of experience and some networking connections for those coordinators. But getting those coordinator hirings right, if there's one thing that we learned through the Brian Daboll experience, it's paramount. You got to get the right assistants in place in order to maximize the talent on your roster. So I think experience is super important, Alex. And I think all of that comes down to our next trait, which is going to be being a CEO. I mentioned Hafley for that. I think Hafley is a great example to point to. The guy has been a CEO of a defense. He's been a CEO of a head coach program with Boston College. And I think being a CEO allows you to network and gain those connections to get those right coaches in place. So what's your perspective on the trait of being a CEO as a head coach?
Well, you want to know what comes with CEO, just that acronym. You know, it usually is attached to that respect, you know, respect. People respect the CEO, if you're a good one, obviously. But in this instance, we're talking about good CEOs. CEOs traditionally command respect. And I would say the Giants haven't had a CEO in that building, in GM or head coach spot, that has demanded respect. Not, and the thing about respect is it's not demanded. I say it's earned. And the Giants have not had people in there that have earned the respect of the players and the personnel and staff. You know, that's kind of the result of losing, right? Being a loser and losing games, you lose respect. Winning usually cures all of those things. People will do whatever it takes to be in a winning organization, because that means job security. And people don't want to know that their jobs are insecure, right? You look at Shane Bowen, I bet you he didn't feel like he was pretty safe. Charlie Bull and Mike Kafka right now, they're probably like, well, I'm out of a job in a couple of weeks. Like, nobody wants to be a part of an organization that feels like they move on too fast and that's why John Mara has given really long leashes at times to people, because he doesn't want to look like an organization that brings people in just to fire them in a year or two. But unfortunately, you need to fire fast and hire faster in the NFL, because you need to be cycling to see who's got it. You can't give guys 4 or 5 years all the time to get it right, because oftentimes it's not the case. They need, you get 2-3 years max to really figure things out these days. A lot of, I mean, think about all the, like what the Patriots just went through, you know, firing Gerard Mayo and going to Mike Vrabel. Like, they saw an opportunity, they took it, and look at the results. You need to do what's best for your organization. You cannot let really good people pass by just because you want to see if this guy can make it. Like, they should have fired Brian Daboll last year. That's the reality. We all were like, I don't know about this. He's basically playing for his job. When you're coaching for your job, your back's up against the wall. The probability is already that you're going to end up losing that battle. And it comes down to money at the end of the day. I just don't think they wanted to be paying like 3 head coaches at once. So, you know, I get what they did there and the kind of mandate that they had. But listen, CEO energy is what this team needs. They need to have an identity. Their head coach has to have an identity. Think about Sean McVay. What is Sean McVay's identity? Dude's at the cutting edge. Dude is energetic. He's fiery. He's aggressive. Kyle Shanahan's identity, his schematics, his aggressive style of play, running the football. They're going to beat you down in the freaking in the trenches. Like, these guys have identities. Brian Daboll had an identity as an OC, but he didn't have one as a head coach because he started off really aggressive and strong, and then he just stopped. He just straight up stopped. I really don't understand why. But the Giants need to bring in somebody who's going to have an identity. He's going to command respect because of his style, and he's going to win football games because of that style. All those things are synonymous, and I do think we will find out more about these guys. I think Marcus Freeman has a CEO mentality. I think Shula has a CEO mentality. I think McCarthy is – I'd say he does have a CEO mentality just because of the experience. You know, we'll see if that's what they value the most. And I think that Jeff Hafley, I need to learn more, but I do think he qualifies as that as well because of, like you said, his experience with Boston College. And people look at the record and say, oh, his record was so bad. Let's look at the context, man. I mean, he had the best record of any rookie head coach in his first year at Boston College. And by the way, he's a defensive coach, and he had one of the best receivers in college football with Zay Flowers. So like, he's seen some success. Like, he knows what that looks like. I wouldn't write him off as, you know, I wouldn't write off his experience as a head coach at the college level. It doesn't make a huge difference to me in the long run, but it is a variable to consider when evaluating him as a prospect.
Well, I just think there's no replicant for actually playing that role, for playing that CEO role. I know that it's different. It's varying degrees of playing it at the head coaching level and playing it at the collegiate level, but the NFL level versus the collegiate level. But still, just being in that role, I think, is crucial. Having to manage that many people, having to answer for the team's success, for the team's failures, being the CEO, that's something that you can't replicate unless you're in that job. And whether that's at the head coaching or whether that's at the NFL level or the collegiate level, being a head coach, you can't replicate that experience. So I do think it's valuable. I know a lot of people want to say, listen, I only want somebody with NFL head coaching experience. Those candidates, guys, are very few and far between. You're not going to find a lot of candidates that actually have NFL head coaching experience. But guys who have head coaching experience at the collegiate level might have a leg up on the rest of the guys. Think about a guy like Tom Coughlin. He got that job with the Jacksonville Jaguars because he was a great head coach at Boston College. Then, after having that experience with the Jaguars, he went and became the head coach of the Giants, and that is history all she wrote. So I think it's very valuable experience. Now, another guy who has some CEO experience, Alex, but has not been a head coach yet, is Chris Shula. The reason why I say he has some CEO experience is because he's coached on both sides of the ball. He's a defensive coordinator right now for the Los Angeles Chargers, and he's been working primarily as a defensive assistant for several years with Los Angeles since 2017, so almost 10 years now. But he also does have a couple seasons where he did contribute on the offensive side of the coaching staff as a passing game coordinator and working on that side of the ball, which I think is super valuable, having experience on each side of the ball. But Sean McVay has taken Chris Shula under his wing and has actually ran a lot of offensive concepts by him, special teams concepts, defensive concepts. He doesn't use him as just the DC or just the defensive assistant. He pretty much tries to position Shula to take over in a CEO role and gives him a little bit of everything just to kind of mentor him and give him the experience necessary so that when he is asked to make that head coaching jump one day, he's ready for it. So I think that Shula is very interesting in that respect because he does have some CEO experience that Sean McVay has handed to him, has entrusted in him, but also because Chris Shula, Alex, he knows how to maximize talent, which is the last trait that we do want to dive into. Maximizing talent is so important because when you watch this New York Giants team this season, they have some talent. They don't maximize it. Brian Burns should not be dropping into coverage as often as he is. He should not be playing QB spy and QB contain as often as he is. He should be getting after the quarterback. And if Chris Shula was coaching this defense, I guarantee you, constantly, Brian Burns would only be getting after the quarterback. How about Jackson Dart? And, you know, how about Malik Nabers, Kim Scadabo, all the talent that the Giants actually do have on the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball, Dexter Lawrence, the fact that he's playing out of position so frequently. Maximizing talent is so critical. And that could be critical for coordinators, but it's also critical for head coaches to have that oversight on the whole program and say, I want this guy doing this and I want that guy doing that. That's how we're going to maximize the talent that's on this roster. Because truthfully, maybe Joe Shane has built a decent roster. Maybe the coaching staff is just failing this roster and this depth chart. But that's why I think Chris Shula is an attractive option. I think the same can be said about some of these other candidates that obviously we've discussed before. But maximizing talent, Alex, so important, especially when you watch how this Giants team collapsed 5 times with 10-point leads in the fourth quarter this year. I mean, that was just a failure to maximize the talent on the roster. The talent put them in position to win those games. The coaching staff failed them. So that's why I think maximizing talent is such a crucial trait for the next head coach.
I mean, absolutely. And, you know, to talk about Chris Shula for a second, if there's anyone that I'm willing to give a first year head coach a chance on right now, it's probably Chris Shula. And the reason I say that is because he is the epitome of collaborative, right? If he, like, think about this, when Shane Bowen decided to run the same exact play multiple times in the fourth quarter to absolutely screw us and any opportunity we possibly could have had at making a comeback or stopping, you know, our opposition from scoring, that mistake happens once under Chris Shula. One time. That is a one-time mistake. He learns from that, and he never makes it again. Brian Daboll let that happen 3 times. 3 times he let that happen, not to mention multiple offensive problems. And over the years, how many times have we seen replicated mistakes? Chris Shula, I get the sense, you know, when something happens that he doesn't like, he steps in and he freaking solves it, right? Defensively and offensively, he will identify, okay, we are not using this player correctly. Let's be creative and find a creative solution to maximizing this talent. Exactly that, right? Our coaching staffs have not maximized talent in a freaking millennia. It really feels like a decade since we've maximized talent. Over, you know, feeding Malik Nabers with volume is not maximizing talent, guys. That is the opposite of maximizing talent. Giving Malik Nabers 150 targets, you know, or 200 targets is not maximizing talent. That is egregious amount of risk. And he gets hurt because of those things. He gets a couple concussions as a rookie. You know what I mean? Like, you need to be able to say, okay, this guy is really good at this. We're going to schematically incorporate him into our system so they are given those opportunities to win where their strengths lie. Right? That is where a guy like Chris Shula is going to really help. Because he's going to say, okay, Brian Burns, why are you in coverage? Why are you in coverage? You are not an inside linebacker, not a linebacker, not a safety. You are a pass rusher and one of the best in football. You know, so he's going to identify, okay, this guy is really good at that. Let's never have him do stupid shit like dropping him into coverage. You know, let's identify, you know, Wandell Robinson, he's really good on screens. Let's give him a little more, some more screen passes. Let's open up the offense a bit more, which opens up the deep ball. Let's run the ball. Let's do more creative things and maximize our skills. Like, he's going to be that type of coach. And it takes time to actually, like, establish that identity, establish that philosophical actual implementation. But he's the type of coach, the first year, there'll be mistakes, right? It'll be a process getting it right. You know, you talk about midseason, you know, kind of form. It's going to take a full year for them to get it down. But in 2027, when they have it down to a T, they're going to be really freaking good. And I'm not saying they're not going to be good in that first year, because they will be exponentially better because the standard will be much higher. But they won't reach, like, perfection until late in the season or in 2027, which I'm so okay with if it means long-term sustainability, right? Most important. And the Giants have a ton of cap space in 2027 and draft picks. So it's like, that's okay with me. That first year, like, here's a trend, Anthony, that I've noticed. Every single head coach that we've had, the first year is really good. The second, third, and fourth years, or second and third years, are horrible. They peak in the year one. That's the problem. They bring in this new system. It's a little bit different. It's a little bit creative. And then they just nuke it in year two. They just everyone catches up. The NFL catches up. That is the difference between good and great coaches, or bad and good coaches, even bad and great coaches. Like, the bad ones have one good year, a small sample of flash, and then it just down the toilet it goes because they don't know how to innovate and they don't know how to keep pushing forward. Guys like Shula are at the forefront of, he's been in Sean McVay's system for so many years. He's constantly seeing how they stay ahead of the pack, how, what it requires to be that good, what it requires to be that consistent. I need that. I need that, because our coaches are failing because they're not innovating. This dude is never going to stop innovating. That is a huge bonus you get from Shula, which is why he is at the top of my list at the moment for sure.
Yeah, he's among the coaches at the top of my list for all the things you just mentioned, the maximizing of the talent being paramount to them, especially when I look at that Rams defense, Alex. They don't have a lot of high draft picks invested into it. Like, yes, they've got Byron Young. They've got, you know, Jared Verse. Those are some high picks, but they have undrafted free agents starting and playing big time minutes in that defense and playing really good football right now because of Chris Shula's scheme and the way he builds that scheme around his players to maximize their talent. He's incredible in that regard. And that's why I think he's one of the most attractive candidates to me, just because I think when you're that smart to build a scheme around your talent, you also have a good relationship with that talent. You also have a good understanding of how to put everybody in place, because he's putting the players in place to succeed. I think he could put the coaches in place to succeed as well if he was given the opportunity to be in that CEO role. So I think Shula's one of the best examples of maximizing talent. But you mentioned it earlier, McCarthy did a great job maximizing quarterback talent throughout the entirety of his coaching career. I think a guy like Jesse Minter with the Los Angeles Chargers, he's done a tremendous job maximizing defensive talent over there as a defensive coordinator for Jim Harbaugh's team. So there's a lot of these candidates right now. And I even think looking at Jeff Hafley, Green Bay Packers defense, he gets a lot out of those guys. They don't have a ton of great high-profile players all across the unit. They have a few here and there. Obviously, they've signed Xavier McKinney, and he maximized Xavier McKinney quite quickly. McKinney had the best season of his career last year and is still playing at an elite level. Michael Parsons was playing with a man, like a man with his hair on fire up until that injury on Sunday Night Football. So I think that a lot of these candidates do a good job of maximizing the talent, but who's going to maximize the coaching staff talent, I think, is number one for me. And I think that falls back to that discussion about experience and the CEO and the leadership. Those are the number one, or really, those are the top traits. When I'm looking at my checklist, those need to be checked off. And I think all of the other things like maximizing talent, that falls in place with that experience and with that leadership. So let me get a coach with some leadership and with some experience, and I think the rest will look just fine. That CEO that the New York Giants are looking for. But who's that going to be, and who do you guys want that to be? Who do you think it's going to be? Drop everything down below in the comment section. Let's hear your thoughts on the New York Giants head coaching search, which is going to kick into high gear really soon. We know it's not going to be Mike Kafka. We can pretty much just scratch him off the list, erase him, and forget about him. But that Giants head coaching search, it's going to kick off in the next 2 weeks, and we're going to cover every little piece of information that comes out of it right here on Fireside Giants. So make sure to leave a like if you enjoyed, subscribe if you're new, ring the bell so you don't miss an episode, and comment your thoughts down below in the comment section. Listen to Apple or Spotify. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review. Go ahead and follow us on all of our social media channels at Fireside Giants. Without further ado, we'll catch you on the next one. Have a good one, and let's go New York Giants. Perfect.